This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, we're going to be talking about some pretty heavy topics, especially right now. And then later, I'm going to be talking to Lucinda Morell, who was with us on Dreamland recently and has got a lot to say. We're going to be talking about the experiencer movement. We are going to be also doing a recap for you of Contact in the Desert. We were both there. I think I did about 8 hours of speaking. I did an intensive 2.5 hours. And Lucinda was part of that at one point. I did a lecture, a paid lecture, and a free lecture. And we'll get into those. And then I also did a couple of panels. So I was a busy boy, and boy, did I have fun. I love Contact in the Desert. It's my favorite thing. And unlike most of them, they invite me back every year. So I get to go every year, and I love that. I had loads of fun, and I love people. I am not the kind of speaker who comes and sits in his room the whole time and then only appears briefly. I'm out there, as you know. If you go to Contact, it's easy to find me. And I'm not a celebrity. I probably could play that role if I wanted to, but I don't. I'm part of you guys. That's what I do. I'm here. Wait a minute. Let me turn on the timer, which, as usual, I have forgotten. And I'll probably forget some of the breaks, too, because I'm much more interested in talking to you than telling you about that wonderful book back there, Transformation 2026. Get your copy. Get it now. And go to Amazon to get it. There will be signed copies on unknowncountry.com. Not many, but there will be some. And so if you go on Unknown Country to the store, you can find it there. If you can find it there, that means there are signed copies. And there will be probably for about a week. Okay, from now. Now, speaking of Unknown Country, we have a GoFundMe. We are trying to raise $8,500, which in my world is a lot of money. And I am not a rich man. Who would be a rich person spending their entire life doing this? The answer is, that ain't gonna happen. So I can put some of my own money into it. I could probably afford to put about $2,000 into it. But I need $8,500, and I've got a little over $6,000 right now, or a little under $6,000 right now. So the GoFundMe is available on the brand new Unknown Country website homepage. Click on it and give us a little change in order to create this magnificent AI-powered search engine that will totally revolutionize the website, but more importantly, give you unprecedented access to not only the information, the vast amount of information that's been put on there since 1998, but also the ability to have something that can sort of think, work with you as any is to be a higher level AI, work with you as you explore your own ideas. I think that's very, very cool. Okay, now, what I want to talk about before Lucinda comes on, and we might talk about this as well with her. I'm not sure how interested she is and how involved is. I've been very involved in the scientist disappearances. And in fact, one of my presentations at Contact was about this subject. The day before Contact, Melissa Casillas' body was found. She had disappeared in 2025. In New Mexico. Now, you think, and now they're saying that she committed suicide. Her family's saying she didn't even own a gun. So, whoa, what's going on here? Let's talk a little bit about something really really heavy, so get ready. Now, I'm not relating in any way anything any American intelligence agency or law enforcement agency may do that is connected to the Gestapo. But they had, in Germany, developed a method of controlling people called Sippenhaft, which was to, and it was legal, it was in the German laws at the time. These laws stipulated that if a person did something that was against the state, then their entire family was guilty. But there was a corollary to this. People could be arrested and threatened with this. In other words, they could say, unless you tell us what we need to know, we are going to arrest your entire family. We have the legal right to do that. Now, in the United States, under certain circumstances, the president can order an assassination. It used to be very carefully controlled under the law. I'm not so sure that's been the case for a while with the secret government. I think the hidden government is operating entirely outside of the law. So, do they use a form of Sippenhaft? Well, when I looked at Melissa Casius's last few days and General McCaslin's last few days, I saw something very interesting and very disturbing. They both carefully left their cell phones and all of their belongings at home. And then they left, in the case of General McCaslin, carrying only his gun. And in Melissa's case, carrying apparently nothing because she didn't possess a gun. She was killed with one. There's been no autopsy and there's no word of an autopsy coming down. And I wonder if we will ever find that. There has been also nothing about any discovery of their movements right around their houses, and especially in the case of General McCaslin. Well, maybe his movements are well known. If he was taken by someone within the government working illegally inside, hidden inside the government, then they could easily invoke the National Security Act through the FBI and say that the local people could not tell the story. They had to be silent. Now, how could they do that if they're a clandestine, illegal operation? One of the things that has happened is that need to know has isolated probably hundreds of different tiny organs, tiny by the general size of the Pentagon standards, huge by our life standards, organizations within the secret government who do not and cannot talk to each other legally. It is, in other words, a sort of hidden tower of Babel where nobody can say enough to anybody else to even know what the other is doing. It's not a situation where the left hand in the Pentagon doesn't know where the right hand is going. It's a situation in which the pinky doesn't know where the fourth finger is going, and the fourth finger doesn't know where the index finger is going, et cetera, and so forth. It's chaos. It's broken, totally broken. They don't know what they are doing. They don't know what they have. And need to know and compartmentalization has essentially destroyed our ability to function on the secret level. It does not work. So somewhere in this, I think it's possible there is a rogue organization that is masquerading as something with real official locomotion, which if you look back to it, you would find decisions being made that are not being communicated to the to the elected administration, but that are legally required to do so. And I specifically mention assassinations here. The pattern in these two disappearances and now one death is too similar. I think somebody went to these people and did that, a variant of, what's it called again? Stepanov to them. They said to them, okay, you come with us. And if you don't, we're going to kill your family. Or we're going to do something to your family. So you do this. And to Melissa, they said, you just walk out. We're going to pick you up. They may not have said, we're going to kill you. Probably didn't. Someone talked, someone, mysterious, shadowy figures from the Air Force, talked to General McCaslin the night before he disappeared with his gun in his hand. And only that. And I think they may very well have said to him, okay, we're showing up tomorrow. And you come with us. And if you don't, you can forget your family. They're gone. And of course, they do it. So I'm sending out a warning here. There are a lot of other people who could end up in this situation. If I'm right, and I hate to think that I am, as I love my country and I want to respect my government. Got a lot of trouble doing that on a lot of different levels, obviously. Okay, let's go on now. We're going to take a little break for our free listeners. And in that break, you're probably going to hear yet again about Transformation 2025, which is selling very well. And oh, before we take the break, I was on Russ Coulthard's show recently. It's my second visit with him. And I talked about artificial emotions and generated emotions, which I believe happened to Jake Barber. I've talked to Jake about this, and I'm not sure he agrees with me, but I think it's possible. So I have a dark kind of, I've written too many dark novels, maybe. But in any case, I think that it's possible that perhaps some kind of frequency can be used. I'm not sure, that can generate emotions in the human body, human mind, or the brain, I should say. I'm not sure that how it's done. In other words, it could be something else. But I have had personally, and with me, have had the experience of having what I would describe as artificial emotions generated in us, and emotions of meaningless fear, or in my case also despair that made no sense whatsoever. I was once in a situation where in here, I had such an overwhelming urge to take out my pistol and shoot myself that I just had to go sit in the living room and pray to stop myself. Later that night, the young man who lived downstairs below me shot himself. And I think that was something that was done. I think there was something that was coming in here that was intended to get me to commit suicide. I don't know where it came from, whose it was, but it's such an odd coincidence that I would experience what I regarded at the time as artificial despair. And the poor person living immediately below me would shoot himself. Like almost something was coming in and went through both apartments. So, you know, it could be a coincidence, but boy, it's hard for me to believe that. Anyway, what a dark world has been created around a very beautiful, what should be a very beautiful experience. Contact. Why can't we make it beautiful? Why does it have to be like this? And now people are thinking that they're demons, and they're tough guys. They're tough as nails. But I don't know that we should call them demons, because if we say that, then we're immediately down to just one way of addressing them, and that is with prayer. And maybe it's not enough. The Aztecs tried that with Cortes, and they found out that prayer to their gods did not stop cannonballs, which they understood not at all, just as I think we understand the weapons of the Greys and whoever else is here, not at all. Okay, on that note, we're going to take the actual break, and then we're coming back to Lucinda. We'll be right back. Have you ever read Communion? Or have you never read Communion? It's out in a new edition. Very powerful, a subtly new cover that reflects the fact that the visitors are now looking back at us because they truly are. You can get it from the unknowncountry.com store as a Kindle, as a beautiful, sumptuous paperback, or as an unabridged audiobook read by me. It's the first time in the whole life of Communion that it has been read in full in audio format, and believe you me, I felt that reading. I put my life, my memories, into it, and I trust you can hear it in the voice. I sure felt it while I was reading. So get Communion, listen to it, read it. Communion is of central importance to all of our lives. I would like to welcome Lucinda Morrell to the show. Lucinda, I'm so glad to have you and for you to come back. So,
thanks for having me. How are you doing, Whitley?
Well, I'm doing good. You know how I'm doing. You listened to the whole thing. So the better question is, how are you doing after contact? You were a busy, busy lady there. I saw you running around like a head with your chicken cut off.
Yeah, I was busy. And let me tell you, the recovery is taking a little longer as I get older.
Yeah.
Yes, yesterday was the first day. Like, I woke up yesterday and I was still tired. And I was like, oh, wow, that hasn't happened since I had like babies and was like sleep deprived. So, yeah, but I'm feeling a lot better today.
Great. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the conference itself.
Let's go back to the Casillas case.
Yeah, okay, fine. You lead the way. This is your thing. You lead the way.
Okay. So a couple of things. The daughter comes home and she has left both her work phone and her personal phone and her car keys and her wallet. The phones have been like factory reset. So she has wiped her phones. So that's fascinating. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't somebody see her like turn a corner walking down the street with like her hair straightener or her curling iron or some hair device?
I don't know that. She was seen walking down the street, but
she
I haven't
seen walking
it.
Down the street. I think the daughter said that it was missing, like her curling or hair straightener was missing or something like that. These are things. If I was threatened, or if I lived in a world where something like that was happening, keep in mind, she's in her job, and she also, her husband works for the same company, and she's an administrative assistant. Here's the thing that people don't talk about. The administrative assistants have to know a lot for their job. They don't ask to know, but they need to know a lot for their job. And they are the most valuable of any company. Nobody talks about it, but that is the truth. Because the OA, and the AA, there's the office assistant, the administrative assistant, the executive assistant, okay? These are the people that are primarily invisible in the world of corporate America, but they hold all the secrets. And so it is not lost to me that that was her job. It was not lost to me that people in her job knew her husband, therefore her family. She would know everybody. And as a woman, women have weird comforts. And if we want to tap out, I always say, like, I do my best thinking in the shower, right? Because it's just like the daily routine. And if you're somebody, especially, I don't know, I see this with Latinas that might have curly hair, that might be in a job that is very kind of, sorry to say, white male dominated. There is a certain cultural, I won't say pressure, but there's something there that is something about fitting in. So I would guess maybe this is somebody who had to straighten her hair or felt more comfortable straightening her hair. And if that's the case, it's a routine where you learn it so much that you can kind of tap out, and it creates, these are things that create liminal spaces for people, and they create almost a meditative liminal journey kind of space. And if you're stressed, that's going to be your comfort. Because I'm thinking, why would she take her curling iron, her straightening iron? Probably a beloved possession that nobody's going to bother to take away. They'll take away her phone, they'll take away something. Or I think with McCaslin and with a lot of these people, especially if there are, if you find out there are meetings before, there is like, you're going to meet with people and it's going to like, look at the mafia. Hey, there's going to be a meeting, and look at the Sopranos, you know, there's going to be a meeting in the forest. Well, there's always forest meetings or whatever, but there's going to be a meeting in the desert, in the for somewhere remote, and we're going to talk about something. But there's always going to be that little nudge as of, am I the one getting taken out, or am I the one getting moved somewhere, or something like that. That's where my mind goes. These people may have gone under the pretense of, we're going to have a secret meeting. You may be gone a day or two, and then something else happens. That's just where my head goes.
That's interesting. Yeah, that I think that sounds makes some sense. And listen, I want to correct something I said earlier. I realized as I was talking that I can't be certain that the feeling of need to commit suicide that I felt and the shooting, the guy that committed suicide downstairs, were on the same night. I can't, looking back, I think they were, but I'm not certain of that. So that's an important little thing. I don't like to leave these things so cut and dry if they're not cut and dry. But it was
No.
very weird anyway, because, you know, why would I just don't understand that. It's why would I ever have such feelings? I don't have feelings like that. And I didn't have any
Right.
reason to, you know? I mean, I'm living a difficult life, I mean, in some respects, but it's also the most fascinating and amazing life you could possibly imagine. I mean, I don't have any intention of committing suicide.
I
So,
don't either.
of course
For the
not.
record, for the record,
Yeah, for the record, folks here,
for the
I don't,
record.
could we be in jeopardy, do you suppose? I don't know. It creeps me out that the government's built all these big detention centers because, you know, we could become detainees. I know, I'm sure that these insiders are really, they're not friendly to NHI at all. I mean, it's a battle there. And I also know that most of the people, the whistleblowers, will not interview with me. And in other words, I've asked all of them to interview with me, and they won't do it. And also, a lot of people who are on the close to the inside, or the ones on the inside that I know, they're not going to do it because they can't do it with anybody. But the ones who are close, they won't do it either. And it's got something to do, and I can't pin it down, with fear of my implant.
I don't know. I don't know if that's it. Okay. This
Maybe
is a
not. So yeah, give me some ideas.
this is a perfect segue. Okay, you just gave me like a perfect segue into something that's on my mind, which is why I'm reeling about the scientists and all the things going on. But okay. So this year at Contact in the Desert, I kind of took on a little bit bigger role than what I usually do at Contact, and I was a like a speaker assistant, right? So I was your assistant and to I think four other people. And here's what happened. I'll just say it straight and people can decide what they want to decide, and then I'll just hear me out. So for the Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp were doing a lecture, and they had three whistleblowers with them. So, right, just in that, that the security is going to be tight. Okay. In the room, we have access to go into all the rooms because you're like working the conference, the people like me. So before, like, there was this long line to get in, and people were in the queue, and they were kind of slowly milling their way in. And I went in because I was looking for one of my speakers or something, and I thought, oh, let me go see if they're in here. And so I walk in, and I walk to the like the front corner so I can like look out on the people and see if I can find the face I was looking for. And I can spy backstage is George and Jeremy, George and Jeremy Corbell, because they're about to go on. And so they're just, kind of prepping. And I get a text from the conference. Basically, we're all in one big chain or whatever. I get a message saying something about George Knapp needs a concierge. Like he doesn't, George Knapp doesn't have a concierge, and that's what we're called, concierge, whatever. So, is it, and the text is anyone there? And I'm like, oh, I'm li like literally looking at him. So I'm like, I'm here. So I'm thinking, perhaps he needs something, right? Because re really, you're just like a production assistant or a gopher in this role, in this, in, you know. So I go back and I say, because I don't want to scare them, you know what I mean? They don't know who I am. I say, I'm Lucinda. So and so says you might need a concierge, or do you might need help with something? And I say that to George, and Jeremy's right next to him. And then my other friend, who is in that entourage, if you will, comes straight up, and he's like, "Hi," and I say, "Hi," which, if you know, is a signal of I'm saying I am safe. This is my name. This is who sent me. And he's coming in from their side saying hello, which acknowledges that we know each other, which means I'm cool. Okay. There is subtext in all of these interactions. And so George doesn't get a word out. Jeremy comes in and says, "We're fine. Thank you. We're fine. Thank you." Subtext, get the hell out of here. I don't know who you are. Got it. Okay. So I go out. And then more stuff happens, but essentially that discombobulated me a little bit. And thank you to the dear friends that I vented to, because I was like, oh, here's why it upset me or triggered me or whatever you want to say, is that I was in the audience now for this talk, which is Jeremy and George and three whistleblowers. And I think all of these are wonderful people. Okay. I think they're doing something very brave and heroic. I respect them deeply. But they're there for 90 minutes asking for help. Okay? They need help and they do need help. I myself am somebody that just offered help and they turned me away because they're so paranoid and they don't know who to trust. So
Yeah, that's too bad.
do you see that, like, in a way, this is the psyop. This is the real psyop of what's happening, is that how can we help people that truly need help? But, like, how are we going to do this? Because any American that sees what's happening is going to say, this is unfair. This is un-American. This is not just. This is unethical. This is not okay. We don't stand for this. I think that the consensus is, this is not what we signed up for. This is not something we stand for. We also don't know how to help. It's a very helpless feeling to have somebody ask for help when you know they need help, but you don't know how to help.
Oh yeah, I know doctors get into that situation all the time, and psychologists and people like that, and everybody does. I mean, I've been in that situation. I've been laid with my wife in my arms when she was dying, wishing to God I could figure out how to help her and couldn't. So yeah, but I've known Jeremy and George for years. I love them both. They're great guys, and I can well understand what happened.
Yeah,
I mean,
me
they're not
too.
gonna, they are, I'm not gonna say Jeremy and George are paranoid, but I'm not gonna say Jeremy and George are not paranoid either.
I think you have
They're
to be
just like me in
paranoid.
that respect. If a
Yes.
total stranger had walked in there, it was not my concierge, and had said to me, I'm here to help, and I had never heard of him before, I'm sorry. I would have probably reacted the same way.
I think so too. That's why.
Yeah.
So what I had to do is, like, step back and check my ego and check my hurt feelings and my pride and just be like, okay, what just happened? Then I'm like, okay, Lucinda, that was probably not the. So I think I misinterpreted as, well, I don't know. I thought he needed help. So I thought he needed something. Like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, his mic is not working, or like there's a technical issue of, like, I'm gonna have to go get them water. There's no water in the green room, or like, do you know what I mean? That's where my head was going,
Yeah.
just because that's the role that I'm in, right? And so I'm told George needs something, so I'm like, okay, here I go to help do the thing, and that's where everything got a little wonky. But
Right.
again, no disrespect, and it's, I take full accountability for my misassumptions, but it brings to light for me this bigger picture of, like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to help? How are we going to support them and help them do this? And I think, listen, I say paranoia, but I think paranoia is pretty darn healthy in this, under these circumstances, and what these people are going through, and their poor families. I can't imagine if this was one of my relatives or a dear friend, or, it's horrible. It's horrible that
Well,
this is happening.
I mean, it has to stop. If there are people out there murdering people over this, it's gone way too far. It's someone's way out of control. And now we have also got this the disclosure website that was so popular. It had 1 billion hits or something. Huge, unbelievable, unprecedented interest. And what happens? They start redirecting it, and f at first to other sites that promote the political end of the government's interests in this. I'm not going to go into that because this isn't the political end. The
Great.
disclosure isn't a political issue. It's a larger issue than that. But it suddenly is. So I'm not going to say what. Anything about the politics, I'm just going to say it was redirected to a political website. Then it was redirected and started to mock us. And why in the world would any administration that had just gotten that many hits, and it's a very controversial administration. A lot of people do not like it. The polls show that.
Oh, you're talking about aliens.gov.
Yeah, aliens.gov. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, okay.
And yet they were willing to
Yeah.
look at those billion hits as probably a couple of hundred million or more, maybe even half, maybe even 300 or 400 million people involved worldwide, and say, okay, we can just mock them. I don't think the administration at the higher levels knew that happened. I think that was a psyop. I think it was done on purpose in order to tell, to send the world the message. We're in control of this. We have no respect for you. We don't like you very much. And you can basically forget disclosure. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somehow the people in Congress who are working toward this and the people in the administration who are working toward this will actually defeat the resistance enough to the point where we can get to where we need to be, which is certain knowledge that NHI is here. That is where we need to be. And someone is still fighting that like hell. And I think they're tailoring, they're tailoring the people who can tell more. Like General McCaslin, for example. I mean, you point out that Melissa Cassius obviously had a lot of information of some kind because of her position. General McCaslin had more. He was like the ultimate administrative assistant because
Right.
he it was the executive controlling all of those things. And they
Right.
just took him out, I think. I think they took him out because they were afraid of disclosure. Because if he'd invoked the whistleblower act, it would have been game over. Game over. He would have had too much knowledge. And
Yeah.
okay, go ahead.
So aliens.gov is definitely a power play. Just a power play. Like, don't forget who's daddy in this play. What I found very interesting was my complete lack of reaction to it. Everyone around me was just losing their minds. And I was like, why are you surprised? They were putting out videos that had clearly already been debunked. They weren't putting out anything that was too fantastic. It just wasn't. It's par for the course if you've seen, this administration and how it treats certain people, certain demographics, that, sorry folks, are not all bad. You can't here's my rule. Anything that seeks to other another human being is simply wrong, and I want nothing to do with it. When you dehumanize a human being, and I don't care if that's the worst criminal or if that's Gandhi, when you dehumanize a human being, there's something inherently wrong with that, and you need to step back and think before you support that or that narrative, because that is very damaging to the soul.
Oh God, yes. And I mean, it's in the world. Look what happened to the Jews during World War II, and what the Jews then turned around and did to the Arabs in Gaza. I mean, we never learn. We
It's
never learn.
a cycle. It's a cycle. And if you can't heal from that cycle, it is destined to just keep repeating. You're going to get the
Right.
lesson again. The lesson's going to come until you learn it. And it'll just keep repeating, and it's irrespective of time or place or people, it's coming. I'm very intent on teaching folks that we cannot move forward from external influence coming in. We have to just always work from the inside out, right? This is about,
Yeah.
I've never known what this thing disclosure is, because I don't believe in the thing we're calling disclosure. And however governments want to spin a narrative that they are calling disclosure, it will always be for their benefit it's not going to move the needle at all. If you want to, if you need proof of that, look around. They've already said that something's there, that there's something that we don't know, and that it we all the things. Like, disclosure's already happened. People don't want to believe it. And so, or people are just too tapped out to believe it because they're too busy and it doesn't affect their daily life. Until it affects a human being's daily life, they're really just going to look at it and keep walking because it's not in their house, right? So I say, like, for me, I'm the same way. I was the same way until I realized, oh, that thing, that's in my house. And I had to do my own self work. And so, because of that, I don't need to rely on anyone else telling me what something is. I know what it is. I know what it is on a level that a lot of those people do not know. And so that to me is a blessing, because there's, I am my biggest critic, and no one's gonna vet something. I say I always re I my job is to reverse engineer my own experiences, and then we can talk about it with other people, and I can share and kind of swap stories with other people, and we could try to figure out what the big picture is together. But it's not until I've done my work and I come to the table as some like autonomous sovereign being saying, here's how it is for me. And then I deal with, and I'm engaging with somebody else who comes at the same thing. But this weird spinny thing of we don't know and somebody tell me and I'm going to find out and everything, that is never going to end well, period. It's never going to end well because they're doing it wrong, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and especially because you're deeply connected with or connected with the indigenous community, has a completely different vision of this. Now, I want to talk about visions of this because I just got a text from Steve Neal, who is the, Steve, of course. His Breaking the Silence is his podcast. Beautiful. He's a very good animator. And I always joke to him, I say, "Hey Steve, your AI is great." He hates that, of course, because he wouldn't go near AI. He hates AI because he
I
is
love Steve for that.
I do too. And anyway, so do look at Breaking the Silence, folks. If you he's shadow banned just like all of us in this space,
Yeah.
and you might have trouble finding it, but it's out there. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to take a slightly different turn. Because something quite explosive has just happened that's going to cause a lot of trouble. We'll be right back. The president has directed the Defense Department to release all of its documents involving UFOs and aliens. There are rumors that this might actually happen, and even that they might tell the truth. If you read the Whitley Strieber Substack or my most recent blog on unknowncountry.com, I explain exactly why. But if it does happen, does it also mean direct contact with aliens for more people? What happens if they come into your life, your children's lives? It's not going to be abductions like it was in the past. It's going to be a very different experience. Something much more like what happened to my family after the communion experience. I wrote two books about it, Transformation and Breakthrough. They were beaten to death by the media and not much read, but they remain the only chronicle of such an experience that has ever been put into print. They're a blueprint for how to make contact work, and it can work, and that is certainly very important. Governments come and governments go, but the visitors are going to be in our lives from now on, forever. So, how do we handle this? Is it good, bad? Are we in danger, or at the start of something wonderful? Find out how one family made contact work in Transformation 2026, the massive update to the original book, available now on Amazon.com. We're back, folks. We're talking to Lucinda Morell. We're going to be talking a little later about the experiencer movement and what we need to do as close encounter, those of us who are close encounter witnesses or who are interested in the phenomenon in that aspect of it, to start to unite and become a force politically and culturally more than we are. But first, here's a headline that has just appeared in the Daily Mail. Shocking twist after America's top exorcist claims UFOs are demons. Now, that has been floated by Pete Hegseth. It is a growing meme. And I think that it is a real problem for the right-wing Christian community. I think they believe this. I think many people in the government believe this, in the Air Force in particular, which is one of the reasons they are so silent about it, because you're supposed to ignore demons. I've talked to Chris Bledsoe about it, and of course he has got a lot of friends in the Pentagon. He went to southern France to commune, I guess, to commune with the lady on the equinox, and he's in sort of a strange position, because wouldn't she be considered among the demons? I don't know, but so it's pretty complicated and pretty dangerous. I get back to those detention centers and the conviction that is really strong. I met some of these personnel who believe these are demons, and they're terrified of even being near me. I go back to the fear that the implant is somehow connected to this, and, you know, does that mean I'm simply a hand puppet for demons? Is that what they think? And do they think we're all infected and they're going to cleanse us, cleanse the world by getting rid of all of us, putting us in detention centers and disappearing us? Am I going down too paranoid a path? I don't know. I mean, in 1939, that would have seemed like a very paranoid path to be going down in Germany. But then what do you know? It happened. To many people, not just to the Jews, but to all kinds of people who didn't agree with the Nazi administration, and when Dietrich Bonhoeffer took Christian values right to Hitler and confronted him with them, he was put in Dachau, and right before Dachau was liberated, they killed him. This great Christian theologian. If he was with us now, I'll bet he wouldn't have called these things demons. I would have bet he would say, well, they're a lot more dangerous than that. Because as soon as you say that, you restrict your ability to engage with them completely. As I said at the beginning of this show.
Let me one-up you on that one. It's not that you restrict your ability, but what you do is you give up your power. You give up your power to fear. And the biggest issue I have with this is as a Catholic, as a bad Catholic, you know, I'm a bad Catholic, whatever. I say
that girl in general.
I am. I'll own it. My thing is, like, I'm gonna create. I have my own relationship with God, with Jesus, with the Holy Spirit. And I got no pro. I just got no time for the business of the church. I don't believe that business belongs in spirituality. Period. So, sorry, not sorry. You know. We can be in community at church. Don't ask me for money. That's just how it goes. The fear, okay. As somebody who has encountered demons and a lot of other entities out there, I take the approach it, well, my approach is this, and I don't know if it's an indigenous approach. I don't know if it's a shamanic thing. I don't know what it is. I just know that this is how it is for me. I see it as there are many, many entities in your waking life today. Okay? Go outside and look at how many birds and bugs and critters and all the things that are going on right now outside your door. The what I'll call the invisible world is no different. Okay? And you engage with things you don't know in kind of a similar way. I was pre-vet in college, and I was an animal science major. It's not what I ended up doing, but and I loved all things animal behavior because in animal behavior, you encounter something that you don't know, and you don't know its temperament, you don't know its personality, you may not even know how dangerous it is. And so you do this like, you ping the thing and it pings you back, and you kind of move and you decide your boundaries, and you know if you've crossed a boundary, and you pull back and you are engaging with a thing, and it goes that way. Demons, from my experience, A, yes, very clever if you get to those upper levels of those demons. They're very, very clever. But some aren't. And they are just another entity in that invisible world, like aliens, like Bigfoot, like the things. And I say the things we call, because who knows what it really is. The things we call demons, the things we call Bigfoot, the things we call aliens, the things we call angels, okay? The things we call ghosts, spirits, cryptids, all the things. They are there, and you know your boundary. And it knows its boundary, and you find your way. Demons are dangerous because if you don't know what you're doing with the engagement, their function involves feeding off people. And so it's like a mosquito, right? You know, its function is to feed off you. And therefore, you know, it's a parasitic thing. It's not a symbiotic relationship. It's a parasitic relationship. It's going to feed off you. It's going to take from you, and it's going to be better, and you're going to be less. It'll be more, and you will be less. Therefore, navigate delicately. And some of them are very smart, and some of them are very clever. I personally have met many people that consider themselves, I've met many people that think they're engaging with angels and think they're engaging with aliens. And in my experience, I'm like, oh, that's not what you think it is. Okay? That's just me. And who knows if I'm right or wrong. I have my vetting process, and there are tells. Okay? There are tells. If your angel is telling you that it needs to merge with you or come into your body for any way, or it needs your energetic space to do something, it's not an angel. That's not how angels work, in my opinion. Sorry. Okay. That kind of thing. But more dangerous than all of that is somebody of authority telling people, don't even go there. They're doing it because they're trying, you know. I'm going to say best case scenario, the church is trying to keep people safe by saying don't engage with demons, and I think that is the most clever demon that is eliciting that, because we're going, because a lot of people now are going in blindly to something that they should have been taught from a young age. It's your soul knows. It's your God-given right to understand that the world you live in, the seen and the unseen. And for somebody to come and act as an authority over you to say, stay away from it, you don't know what it is not cool. There are a lot of people who can't help it. These things are coming to them and they're engaging them. And those people have no power because they've never been trained toward that empowerment. And that's where we are right now. That's a big problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where I've been since my child. No one ever trained me. I just had to do it myself, and I've learned to live with it. And now am I to be blamed for consorting with demons because I had to learn to live with something I couldn't get rid of? And listen, I think I'm a much more prayerful man than you are. Because I'm also Catholic, but I really live. I'm very conscious of living by a moral rule. It means a great deal to me. I'm not a bad man. I live a very considered life, and I'm not saying you don't, but I take it more seriously than almost anyone I know. I do
I do
pray.
too.
Yeah, well, you do too. Exactly. I pray. I am every day of my life, I start and end my day with a review of my moral situation. What will I do today that helps others? And at the end of the day, what was my day like? Who did I help? Who did I reach out to? Did I do my best for others today? That's every day. And that comes to me from my parents and from my own self. And I don't see a room for demons in that anywhere. I
No,
know.
okay, let's get into Christianity for a second. If Jesus died on a cross for our sins, and now the gospels are written, and the gospels mean good news. It means that Jesus died for our sins. And how we honor that is not by living in fear. This is how I see it. I see it as the kingdom of God is in me. So, demon, you better watch out, right? Because I know my heart, and I know where my heart lies, and I know who protects my heart and spirit. And that is something, it helps that I'm a medium too, and I can see all this kind of stuff. Like, I don't want to die, but if something happened and I did die, and I knew that I died trying to be of service and trying to do the right thing and hopefully trying to help other people and be a healer in any way, then that is a great death. People die all the time, Whitley. We know this. And we are impermanent little things. We can't be so full of ourselves that we hope for these things. We pray for a long, happy, loving life, but if it doesn't come, the real question is like, did I do everything I could? Did I do my best? Did I try? That's all we can ask. And that's your prayers are the same as mine. I just said, was I of service today? Did I help anything? Am I healing, right? That's all we can ask. And for me, it's about checking your fear and staying in your heart and staying heart-centered. And this is why I think religion, the business of religion, has done a great disservice to people, because what has happened is the business of religion has screwed people over to the point where they become like atheists, or they don't want to have a spiritual practice. And in all of this, you gotta have faith in something. Even if it's faith in yourself, if it's faith in the universe, if it's faith in creator, like whatever you want to call it, you need to be able to reach out to something in your darkest hours, or when there's a real threat happening. And that's why I keep saying, like, it is just about people's personal encounters. This is a real personal journey for folks. You know, that's all I can tell you. I can be there next to you. I can hold you. I've said this to a lot of people on the reservation that have gone, that are going through despair and problems on a level that we will, most of us, thank God, will never understand. And all I can tell them is that, like, you are in a hole. I can jump in the hole with you. I can be right outside the hole, but I can't make you climb out of that hole. You have to get out of that hole yourself. And that's what we are. We're just community for people doing their own work. It only is successful when people do their own work and come to their own conclusions. Nothing from the outside can help that other than your external should be your support system. Who do I want to keep around me that I like? I've had people tell me that you are possessed, Whitley. And yet, the people that have told me that have shown a lack of caring and love and respect in a manner that you show me every day. So, whatever it is, if that's true of you, if that's true of me, then so be it.
You know what they would say in response to that? They would say, "Watch out, Lucinda. Demons are very clever."
Yes, they
And
are.
but I don't. I have a feeling that that cleverness might not extend to the way I am inside, which is very much in love with people. I've loved people all of my life, and I had a good wife, and I lived with her faithfully. Every day for 45 years, I never cheated on her. I never had any of those things. And when I'm with people, like when I'm out in the at a conference like that, I'm there. I'm there because
Yeah.
I love people. And I just don't think any demon could handle that. I don't
Your
think they
actions,
could.
yeah. Your
But I think they, yeah, go
actions say
ahead.
everything. Your
Well,
actions say
exactly.
everything. I mean,
Well, now let's move on a little bit because we're getting sort of toward the end of the show. We're actually, if the stopwatch is right, we're toward the end of the show. Let's take a few more minutes to talk about experiencers and the experiencer movement.
okay.
We've talked about this a lot in the past, and there's two issues here that I think we need, three that we need to address. First, I want to talk about plans. Because there are plans forming. Second, I want to talk about power over, and we are not going to be doing that. We are not going to be going to as supplicants to these various organizations that want to control us from the outside. People who are not themselves experiencers are people who claim to be experiencers because they saw a light in the sky and they figure that gives me the agency to completely control all of the experiencers. I don't think so. I'm not talking about Chris Bledsoe because he's a real experiencer. That's another story. When I said lights in the sky, I'm talking about a scientist who might say, "Well, I had lights and saw lights in the sky," or "My sister-in-law had an experience, therefore I'm with you." That's seeking power over. The next thing I want to talk about is money, because this is a big issue. It's always been a big issue with me, because from the very beginning of my relationship with the visitors, they were, "Don't exploit this. I get money for this from my books and enough money to manage to knock along on the website. It pays for about 70%. The subscriptions pay for about 70% of what it costs me every year. And I have to hope that my book sales make up and my conferences make up the rest. But money is a is necessary to make things work. But the point of profiteering from this is another story. So let's now talk about what we have been talking about just together, about where the experiencer movement we think it should go, where you think it should go mainly, because I think you're the leading figure in this.
So I for a long time wanted to put together an experience or conference, a conference that was, for experiencers by experiencers, and did the whole thing. I actually have the whole thing on paper ready to go, but couldn't get the funding for it. And so it just sat. But there is a need. And as I started to chat more with other people about it, I realized, wait a minute, I don't want a conference. I want a movement. I want a grassroots movement, because the only way that this will work is if we don't have sponsors. The problem with sponsors is that sponsors are very, I'm sure their intention is fantastic. But if you have a big sponsor of, a big foundation or something that sponsors something like this, there is an expectation of a return. And I don't want to be accountable to anybody. How this really started to come up in that next level for me is I was listening. Right now, experiencers are a little bit of a hot topic, okay? But it's a patronizing hot topic in that a lot of people, academics, government, religion, are asking for our experiences, what happened. And then they are taking the story and they are making their own conclusions based on whatever pocket they're in. And none are asking the most important question, which is, what have you learned from it? Especially for those of us that are like lifers, it is a long, beautiful journey. It's hard sometimes. It's very lonely and isolating sometimes. But these are like hard-fought battles. And when we come out, we are different people. We are more fulfilled and we are more able to engage. And it is really big and beautiful and powerful. Nobody's even asking that. They're just saying, ooh, what was the weird thing that happened to you? The collecting the weird story. It's like it's for entertainment, right? We
Right.
learned this very early on in the, when the TV series were coming out, and a lot of producers were coming to, in my case, like the CIRO meetings, Yvonne Smith's organization, to the members saying, we want to do a show about your story, blah, blah, blah. And they would take the story, but then they would twist it. Chris Bledsoe, the same with the MUFON thing, right? Like, it almost became this kind of mockery, like for entertainment purposes only. And they were just totally missing the plot. And so I'm trying to build something that is truly grassroots, wherein we reserve and maintain our sovereignty and autonomy in the conversation, so that when government and religion and academia or whoever come to us, we come as an empowered entity and invited as equals. I'm not anybody's little, organ grinder's monkey. Like, I'm not here to be the showpiece or the entertainment thing for people. And it's funny because a lot of, if you are a minority, you know what I'm talking about. If you're a brown or black woman in society, you know what I'm talking about. We are this kind of invisible thing that nobody has time for until you have something to offer, and then they're just going to take what you offer and they're going to make their own story out of it. And I'm trying to say, as experiencers, I mean, think about it, like, we are like the last bastion of thing you can mock in public with the, like, everybody can make
We're the last group you can safely bully.
yes,
Yeah,
exactly.
exactly. The last group you can safely bully.
And I'm just trying to take our power back.
Well, I'm glad you're here because there's one or more organization related to the scientific and academic worlds that are trying to build out experiencer
Groups.
subsections of their
Yes.
organizations. And I know this only because they're coming to my friends, but not to me. And the reason is that they think that if they get me involved, I will control the thing. And because of the fact that I'm a big part of this community, like it or not. And they don't want that. They want to be in that place.
Say
And
more
that
about
tells
control. Wait, say
they
more.
want control. And the truth is, I'm not controlling anybody. I'm here because of the same reason you're here. I'm not a controlling person at all, anyway, whatsoever. I'm not going to be the cock of the walk. But that's how they think. They think in terms of hierarchy. And I think that's bullshit. Excuse me, folks. I think that's
Okay, hold on.
BS.
They're on to something because Whitley, you're a draw. I know you don't see that yourself because, you don't think of yourself that way. But you're a draw. And if you're involved, okay, I hate to tell you this, my friend, but there's like Whitley, my friend, and Whitley the brand. And the brand Whitley comes with a lot. And so I think that's why these entities, these various groups or organizations or whoever are going to be more cautious when they involve you, which is why we'll just do our own thing. And
Yeah,
that
because
way we have the protection of ourselves. We nobody if anybody doesn't like what we're doing, then they can blame us and we'll be like, okay. And it's I just think it's better for the whole.
Well, yeah, because somebody who worries about Whitley the brand and wants to keep me away because of they're afraid of the power of Whitley the brand, A, does not know me, and B, they think in a way that we do not need in this movement, because in this, yeah, Whitley the brand exists in the world, but I am not the brand. I'm Whitley the person. I'm the
Correct.
person. And that's all you're going to get when you get me. And if they fear the power of the brand, then they're too egotistical to do this, basically.
And therefore, we are happy to engage with anybody. We are happy to have the conversation with anybody, but we will do it as a sovereign people, as a sovereign group, and as our own empowered, respected entity, hopefully, if
Right.
all things go right. And that way, I feel it's just kind of better for everybody, and it'll ease whatever, okay, real or imaginary, whatever stories are going on in anybody's heads, they don't have to be responsible for that. Like, let's just have the conversations that matter and not worry about anything else.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start it, to stop. Let's have the conversation that mattered. Lucinda and I and others are going to be working on building out a viable place for experiencers that is not going to be hierarchical. It is going to be colorblind. It is not going to be hierarchical, and it is going to be about us being ourselves in the context of the extraordinary experiences we have all had and live with. That's the bottom line. Lucinda Morell, thank you very much for coming here today. It's been a real inspiration on many levels.
Thank you for having me. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you and to kind of bounce these ideas off you. I like how we work.
Yeah, I do too. We work together very, very well. I guess that's because we're both experiencers. And if I don't know if you've noticed this, but I find that when I'm with real experiencers, I know that because they're like you and like me. They're not ego tripping, and they're not constantly drawing attention to themselves. They're just doing their best to be who they are.
That's because we've been humbled so much by our experiences.
Yeah, you know, I'll go on another second. The first lesson I got from the visitors was a lesson in humility. When I started engaging with this, I'll tell the story very briefly, I think. And folks, if you've already heard the story, you can go ahead and turn off because I'm not going to do anything. I promise it's over after this. But for those of you who haven't heard this story, you need to hear it. Okay, it's this. My brother came up to the cabin, and I was sort of lording it over him. I mean, I had the cool thing happen, he didn't, and so forth. We're going down to walking down to the place where the circle was, where I'd had this circle built where of stones where it had happened, where I'd been taken up. And suddenly I hear this voice in my head go, "Arrogance. I can do anything I want to you." And I think, oh, I hope that was just my imagination, but I do think, you know, maybe I'm lording over my brother too much. I go down to the circle. We go down to the circle, and we have the most incredible UFO sighting. I mean, it was really wild. He actually saw more than I did. And at one point, it came over low. I mean, it was really there. And I'm thinking, oh dear, I think that voice might not have been just in my head. It might not have been my imagination. I'm in trouble. And the next day, my money all disappeared from the bank. It was gone for 2 days, and then they gave it back to me. And I learned from that that humility is the core of this. If we're going to do this, we have to put our egos in the pocket and leave them there because they don't belong in this. This is for the people, all of the people. And if ever there was a place to see ourselves as being created equal under the eyes of God, it's in the experience or movement.
And ask yourself if a demon would do that.
Thank you very much, Lucinda. A lot of
Thank
great
you.
stuff coming up on Dreamland, folks. Stay with us.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Strieber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.